when the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, oh, the farmer is the man who feeds them all. If you'll only look and see.
That is Pete Seeger singing American Industrial Ballad. A great rare CD. I'm Rick Hogan filling in for John Williams for one more hour. And it's my pleasure to have in here a great writer and great friend of the show and me, William Hazelgrove. He last was on talking about the woman who became President of the United States. You thought there wasn't one? Yes, Mrs. Edith Wilson, Woodrow Wilson's wife, took over when her husband was incapacitated. His latest book, which we talked a little about, and I was very excited about, is sitting right in front of me. It is called Al Capone and the 1933 World's Fair, The End of the Gangster Era in Chicago. Bill, what I told you so appealed to me about this is that 1933-34 World's Fair has basically been ignored as part of Chicago history, a little overwhelmed by, you know, 1893, White City, Devil in the White City, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't deserve to be overlooked, does it?
No, it's really a fascinating story of what the city did at the worst times possible. You have to remember, 1933 was the worst year of the Great Depression. A third of the banks had failed. Chicago especially was hit. And literally, the mayor of Chicago said, we're broke. And during that year, 1933, they're having a World's Fair where they're expecting millions of people to come and spend money.
Yeah. How did it come to be?
Actually, they wanted to celebrate the incorporation of Chicago. So actually, you have to remember these fairs start 10 years before.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay,
sure.
So they're going along in about 1924, and they say, we're going to have a World's Fair. Well, as it went through the various administrations, they'd say, we are going to have it. Well, what happens in between all that is Al Capone. He comes along, of course, the great day in February, 1929, St. Valentine's Day Massacre. They realize they have a horrible problem. Nobody's going to come to the fair because a gangster is literally running Chicago. And I think this is something people don't understand. Capone, we had become a sort of third world country. Capone ran Chicago. He owned the mayor. He owned the police. If you testified against him, you would not make it to the next day. So he literally did control Chicago to the point where people had to go to the president and say, you've got to help us. We cannot control it. So the one thing they realized is, we have to get rid of this guy or we'll never have a fair.
Wow. Al Capone was always great with a quote, and you start this book with a couple of quotes, one from Mr. Capone that says, a smile can get you far, but a smile with a gun can get you further. And then a quote from perhaps the most famous performer at the World's Fair in Chicago, 1933 and 34. I haven't been out of work since the day I took off my pants, Sally Rand. In doing the research for this book, Al Capone and the 1933 World's Fair, what were Bill Hazelgrove, among your biggest revelations? I mean, you knew a bit about it, but
yeah.
But there are always revelations when you do this kind of deep digging that you do.
You know, what I found out was they did a very creative thing to first have the fair to pay for it. They created these gold notes that were basically based on the fact that the hope that the fair would be successful. So they used these like currency to pay all these people to build the fair. They literally had no money. So all these contractors were taking these gold notes that if the fair was not successful would be totally worthless. But as one contractor said, you know, I have crews, I have all this material, I have nowhere to go because literally there's no business.
No building. Sure.
Right. So they use that. The second thing that's very interesting I found was that the Sally Rand character, let's take her. She's very emblematic of what was happening in the early 20th century. America was becoming more urban. Hollywood was coming on. Sally Rand went to Hollywood. She was this Henrietta person from the Ozark, goes out to Hollywood to become a star. But she has a problem. Once the talkies come, she has a lisp.
Mm.
So Cecil B. DeMille says, you're done. And she decides then to go to Chicago, is on State Street doing a stripper act. She knows the World's Fair is coming, and she's thinking to herself, I've got to be part of that. I blew out in Hollywood, but if I can get back on this, I can, you know, maybe get back on the fame train. So what does she do? She grabs two large ostrich feathers from a secondhand store down State Street, goes to try out for this Paramount, which was on State Street, Her outfit's not there. This woman says to her, why don't you just go on naked with just the feathers? Okay. She does it. It becomes a big hit. All right. But now she still has to get to the World's Fair. This is a fascinating scene. So she tries to approach the World's Fair, and they're like, no, we don't need you. We're fine.
Yeah, right.
We don't need you. Okay. So her promoter slash employer says, I've got a way to get you there. He gets a white horse, puts her on the white horse. On the opening night of the World's Fair, there's all the mucky mucks are there. There's big celebration. She gets basically a Chris Craft on this horse, and they come in from the lakeside because it's built out on the island out
yeah,
there,
sure,
right
we'll
on the lakefront.
Yeah.
It comes on the backside, unloads her on the horse. She's on the horse naked again with body paint on, with a blonde hair. Gets off, rides through the World's Fair. Okay, hits the stage where they're having this big celebration. Goes up on the stage. The horse rears at that moment. All photographers snap, thinking she's part of it. She's immediately arrested, but she's a star. And from that moment on, Sally Rand is part of the 1933 World's Fair.
Who was her promoter?
He was an Irishman, Eddie Randolph or something like that. He was just a...
Wasn't Mike Todd the legendary producer? What, did he have something to do with
earlier
this?
Earlier on, because she was actually, before the talkies came, she was a very much a rising star. She had been in like 20 films, and it just, she writes about it later, she says, when they did the sound test, she had this horrible list that came out, all these essays. Here's what's interesting. She was in a lot of early productions with another guy who had a terrible speech impediment, Humphrey Bogart, but his worked for him, right?
It's amazing. It's amazing when you think about it. And Bill Hazelgrove, that's the website, William Hazelgrove, Hazelgrove, where you can pre-order this book. It's out in a couple weeks.
30%.
And you can see, and we will talk a bit about his other books, too. He's terribly prolific, and he becomes, with each book, a better writer. I gotta tell you, chapter 8 begins. He was as big as Babe Ruth and as addicted to media as Donald Trump. And then skips a few sentences. Now, after the St. Valentine's Day massacre, he was sitting in a checkered sport coat with white flannels and a matching white fedora in a Dade County office building in Florida. Guess who that would be? Don't you find it amazing that the two... That history has treated these two fairs, except for H.H. Holmes, who was the star of Devil in the White City. The two most famous people of these world fairs are strippers. Little Egypt in 1893 and Sally Rand. I don't care if someone was alive here and you said, hey, did you go to the 33 World's Fair? What do you remember? Sally Rand.
That's right. And she was the number one financial draw. They had to hire extra accountants because she took in so much money. Everybody went to see her. And of course, you can still go on YouTube and see the feather dance.
Yeah.
And, when I was doing the research on her and actually all her papers at Chicago Historical Museum, it is a sort of a tragic life. There's a lot of divorce because she kept dancing until she was about 70.
I know. She wants, you could see, you people can see, go rent The Right Stuff, the movie The Right Stuff, at that sort of haunting ending in the Astrodome where all the astronauts are staring at each other.
Right.
Claire de Lune is playing, and that is the Sally Rand dancing in that film. I tell you, it's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Bill Hazelgrove is going to be here till the half hour. Again, go to williamhazelgrove.com to order this book.
Come all you hardy miners and help us sing this song.
Learn only Pete Seeger singing from a relatively obscure CD called American Industrial Ballads, because this is Labor Day. I'm Rick Hogan filling in for John Williams till 3 o'clock. William Hazelgrove, if you go to his website, which is William Hazelgrove, that's easy, isn't it? Hazelgrove.com. You can pre-order his soon-to-be-released fascinating and fabulous book, Al Capone and the 1933 World's Fair, The End of the Gangster Era in Chicago, which tells the story of a sadly relatively ignored World's Fair. You said off-air this was the first kind of corporate World's Fair.
Right. What they did is they basically said, there's corporations. Look, nobody's buying anything. So come invest in our fair, and you can showcase all your goods. And so that set the precedent. I mean, 1893 fair was all public funds. This was all corporate funds. Again, Chicago had to pick it up the rest, and they used the gold notes. But so they really pushed it as a way to get the economy going. And then famous quote is, they said, you know, if we don't do something soon, the whole country's going to go Bolshevik, which was a real fear in 1933.
Yeah, I bet it was. Now, Al Capone then comes into this whole picture. They want rid of him. They because, you know, there's some historical, you know, echoes here in the fact that the image of Chicago is based on the killing that Capone did, and the image of Chicago here is based on the a lot of it on the killing that, that others do.
Yes. Well, and Capone at the time was, as we know now, a word figure. I mean, he was, and he still is a major celebrity. If you talk to somebody from another country, they know Al Capone and Chicago.
Yeah, no question.
So, you know, the way they got him was not Elliot Ness. You know, we have to put that to bed.
Yeah, please.
That was a great movie, but it's a canard. Yeah. The way they got him was, basically, they investigated. There was a guy called the Secret Six, and these were six Chicago millionaires who got together and said, if we don't get rid of this guy, nobody's going to come to our city. And so what they did was they put all these funds together. They had a secret force of detectives. They had the first witness protection plan, because basically what they do is to get people to testify against Capone, they send them down South America, and they paid for it. And Capone even said, after he went to jail, he said, the Secret Six is what did me in.
Yeah.
And they really did. And so that's how they got that crazy conviction on income tax. And they, you know, it wasn't for all the murders.
Yeah.
They couldn't get him.
Yeah.
And this was at a time when a lot of people didn't pay income tax.
Right.
I mean, it just
right.
wasn't something enforced. But they got him on that, and that's how they got him into jail and basically put him away.
The fair was successful, was it not?
Yeah, the fair was very successful. You know, so many things came together for this fair. In the 1893 fair, you had the Ferris wheel. Well, what did you have in the 1933 fair? You had the Sky Ride. Now, the Sky Ride was basically this thing that went across the lagoon to the other island where the fair was, and it was extremely high. Now, this is a time when most people had never ridden in an airplane.
Right.
99%.
Of course, right.
So this was phenomenal. So they were basically sitting in small Pullman cars going across on this cable back and forth. So this was their Ferris wheel. Right, so this was a big pull to a lot of people. You know, and again, what a lot of people don't know about the 1933 fair is that Judy Garland was there. Was she there at the start? No, because she wasn't a star yet. She was there with her mother and her sister, and they were doing this terrible act, as she called it later in an interview, where they would just dance and sing. They had no money, and she and her mother got in a terrible fight. So she leaves the fair and goes to the Biograph to see a movie. She comes out, and she sees a man she recognizes and thinks he's a movie star. She goes, sir, can I have your autograph? He gives her his autograph, and it's John Dillinger. John Dillinger.
Who was living around the corner.
Absolutely. Who an hour later is gunned down.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then she goes back to the fair.
Wow. See, that's the kind of stuff that William Hazelgrove that he finds in his research. Talking about historical parallels, the second to last paragraph in this book, in part of the epilogue in which he charts the sad downfall of Sally Rand, among others, he writes, if you walk on Northerly Island today, there is nothing left of the fair except for one Roman column donated by the Italians. It sits there as a strange monolith to the people long gone. That's been in the news.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And, you know, going back a little, 1933 was the rise also of Adolf Hitler.
Yes.
Okay, so Hitler is rearming. He's built the Volkswagen, the people's car. He has the Autobahn. He's got the Luftwaffe, just this incredible air force. Well, what he didn't watch, though, is he didn't watch the way they built a city, because what they built over there was a small city. It pulled more power than towns up in, like, Madison at the time. Okay, it was waterworks. He didn't see that they built cars there. Chrysler came there and put in a whole complex where they assembled cars in front of people. He didn't understand that kind of industrial might that was being flexed there, where they built this incredible city. And then, Rick, they tore it down.
Yeah.
It was the first disposable city. The things we see now with plywood, sheetrock, all these things used prefab, all these suburbs going out there where you see these houses go up in, say, a week,
mm-hmm.
that's directly related to the fair. Why? Because they were building on Northerly Island out there with no building codes.
Yeah.
So they could do all experimental things. And they were doing being cost conscious. So they had to do as many prefab things as they could.
You are obviously, this was obviously a joyful project for you. I can sense that. I mean, they all are in a way, Bill. I mean, you discover things that you didn't know about and you bring them to life. Which fair would you rather have gone to? 1893 or 33?
You know, I read The Devil in White City probably 2 or 3 times, and I really appreciated that story.
Yeah.
And by the way, Burnham's son is involved in this fair, too, and they have all the crazy things with the architects. But the 33 fair, to me, is more fascinating. You have because what you have is a city that is just hanging on. They get rid of this gangster, and they throw the dice and say, no, we're going to have this fair. And all these kids came to this fair. They had Kid Day, where they just open up the gates, and all these kids from all over Chicago would go there, and people would come and see things that they just couldn't believe. One of the things they could do is they could make a long-distance call anywhere in the United States. And we think, so what? But at that time, you couldn't do that.
Yeah.
So you'd call up Aunt Ethel out in California, and she would talk back to you, and people were just blown away. They could press a button and watch a canning factory basically kick into gear and create all these cans of peas and stuff, and people just, they didn't understand. They also had television. They had, you went into a room.
Right.
And they would shoot you with this monster camera, and then they would project those beams, would reassemble in the next room, and it was the beginning of television.
Yeah.
So there was this marvel
really
factor.
These people really tasted the future, because if you think of what Chicago was like in 1933.
Incredibly drab.
Yeah. But I mean, incredibly drab.
Everybody has their little furnace down in the bottom, burning coal. It's all coming. And, of course, the fair was called the Century of Progress.
Yeah.
And so, what they were saying is, look, things are going to get better. We will get through this. And that's why FDR said, can you keep the fair open another year?
That's why it stayed open.
Yeah, and so they did, because he wanted to get that positive experience going and see if he could push that onto the bigger economy.
Did FDR come to the fair?
He actually did. He did. He actually came to the fair. It's amazing how many people did come to the fair. And, and again, a lot of luminaries sort of congregated here. And, of course, by this time, Al Capone was in jail. And then Sally Rand's career took off in a strange arc where it went up, and then once the fair sort of faded, it kind of went back down. She went back on the circuit again. But again, it's really an American story where,
no question.
A city sort of is literally broke. They go, let's have a fair. Let's get rid of the gangster. A girl from the mountains of Ozark goes for her moment of fame. And that's, again, the early 20th century is fascinating, because you have the first urban culture coming in where people all over the country were running to this light, which was fame and fortune. Something beyond the farms now.
Yeah.
Something where you could run off, and mostly they ran west to Hollywood, but they ran to New York, they ran to Chicago, because there was something bigger. And that's a very modern idea.
Well, I hope you have the same success with Al Capone and the 1933 World's Fair, the end of the gangster era in Chicago, as our mutual buddy Eric Larson had with Devil in the White City, because it deserves it. Just this, you people, if you just look at the aerial view that Bill has on the front page, first page of the book, you'll be mesmerized, and the story inside lives up to it. I can't tell you. You keep supplying my bookshelf with things that I love to read, Bill. I'm not even going to ask you what's next.
Yes,
you can
order
the book, and you can explore Bill's many, many other books. The one for you, Madam President, his last two were Forging a President, How the Wild West Created Teddy Roosevelt, and Madam President, The Secret Presidency of Edith Wilson, which I wrote about for the Tribune. You'll find all Bill's books, and you can order this one at williamhazelgrove.com. It's always great to see you.
Thank you for having me.
Always great to see you.